Thank you, choir. Thanks to Gary for all the help in putting the service together today. Thank you very much. And to Sandy for all the help she was in putting the service together today. And to Ron, I know he was disappointed that I cut his readings short. We'll make sure we extend them the next time he's the lay reader. But I appreciate all the help and all the good neighboring that I received this week in trying to put this together. I grew up not too far from here, in Adelphi. Can't call it a town. It's too small. It was a village, and it was great growing up there. It was great because everybody was your neighbor. It's a great thing when you're a little kid to be able to go anywhere and be with anybody and feel safe and secure. It's also a little unnerving to know that if you do anything wrong in the community, before you got home, your parents knew about it. But it was fun. It was a good experience. And I had kind of a special experience because my dad was the lawyer in town. And his office was in my house. And my mom was his legal secretary. So it was a business. And it came to pass that my sister Marcia was in the fourth grade, and my sister Beth left for the first grade. And my brother Tom wasn't born yet, so I was alone in the house as a three-year-old. I had the run of the place. And I had to station myself pretty much in the office area because that's where Mom and Dad were and they could keep an eye on me. So I spent a lot of time in the law office waiting room. And I quickly became notorious for my mouth. Go figure. A gentleman came into the office, and I was in the waiting room playing like I always was, and when he came in, I noticed that he didn't have a hand. He worked at the sawmill, and he'd been injured in an accident, and he'd lost his hand, and there was just the stub. So, I used the excuse that I was three. Old enough to talk, not old enough to remember any of this. So these are just stories that were recounted. I have to see him if a dog bit him. And he smiled. So I got away with that one. Next man that I saw that I heard the stories about came in, and he had a very large nose. And in addition, he also had a problem with the blood vessels bursting in his nose. So the nose would sometimes be purple or sometimes be red in color because of the burst blood vessels. I asked him if he was a clown. He didn't laugh. I committed enough violations early on at three that I should have been banned from the law office forever in order to save my father's practice, but I was not banned from the law office because at 3 years old, everybody knew that I was going to be a lawyer. At three, everybody knew. You could ask anybody in town and they will tell you that I was going to be a lawyer. And when I was six and went to school and when I was 10, and when I was 15, and when I was 18, and everybody knew, all that my teachers knew, everyone in the community knew, everyone in the surrounding communities knew. When I started working in my father's law office when I was 17, putting on a tie and carrying a briefcase and going to courthouses and delivering papers, everybody knew I was going to be a lawyer. And I followed through. Everybody knew, including me. And I worked pretty hard in high school to make sure that I could get into a good college because I was going to be a lawyer. And I went off to college and I didn't work nearly as hard. My wife can tell you stories, but she's a nice lady and she probably won't. I hope. I didn't work nearly as hard as she did. But some of it was because I was actually trying not to do well. Because I started having doubts about whether I wanted to be a lawyer or not. I didn't want to be a lawyer. I wanted to be a teacher. I had a different calling that I was sort of afraid to admit because since I was three, I knew I was going to be a lawyer. And I didn't want to disappoint my family because the law practice was there and that's what I was supposed to do. So I went through college half speed until my parents were almost killed in an auto accident. They got hit by a semi-tractor trailer on a four-lane highway who didn't see that there was a stoplight on the four-lane highway and drove right through their car. They survived, and they were okay. And it woke me up a bit, and I went back to college with a new purpose, saying, I have a commitment, I have to fulfill my commitment, and I studied, and I did well, and I went to law school. Briefly. I went to law school, and the first day they sat everybody down in a room and said, why do you want to be a lawyer? And these people had answers. They knew. And I didn't answer. I didn't volunteer because I just sat there thinking, I don't want to do this. And after the first quarter of law school, I went to my father and said, you know, I really don't want to do this. I want to be a teacher. And he says, it's your life. And I went, well, why didn't you tell me that 10 years ago? We could have saved ourselves a lot of trouble. But I never asked. That was the problem. He says, it's your life. You have to choose. Jesus grew up in a small town. Everybody knew him. And everybody knew his father was a carpenter. It was a pretty safe assumption that Jesus was going to be a carpenter. I'm sure the expectation was there from everybody that worked with him that he was going to be a carpenter. It was a good living. It was a good opportunity, and his father could set him up. Jesus had a different calling. We read about him even as a young boy, when somehow his parents forgot him for 3 days after they left a festival. They lost him, and they couldn't find him for 3 days, and finally they find him in the temple with the teachers, and he's not standing, learning, he's sitting. It's very important that he's sitting. He's sitting with the teachers because they're listening to what he has to say. He has a gift. And though we don't hear about his gifts for many years, we know that he becomes a teacher. He becomes an important person. And people question him and challenge him all along, especially when he returns to his hometown. If I went back to Adelphi and told everybody that I was the Messiah, they would ask me, do you remember when you were 3 years old? Jesus probably had to put up with a lot of that when he went back to his hometown, because he had neighbors, he had friends, he had people who knew him, who had seen him grow and change. It'd be difficult to come back as the most important person in the country. But Jesus did come back, and he was challenged and questioned and harassed, and he went on to bigger towns with bigger questions. And finally, his preachings became so challenging that the people who were the top ministers felt like they had to try to trip him up. So the questions got harder and harder as he went. We read in Matthew chapter 22, they ask him the hardest question. Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? And Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the laws and the prophets hang on these two commandments. Mark puts it a little bit differently, but it's the same message. Of all the commandments, which is the most important? The most important one is, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength. And the second is, love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these. These are the words that guide me the most in the Bible. These are the words that I try to live by. But it's two parts. Sometimes we say, love your neighbor as yourself, but there is the other part, honoring God with everything you do, every action you take. But we can't neglect the second part, which is love your neighbor as yourself. Then you come down to, well, what does that mean? When we read the passage in Luke,
Jesus actually lets the person asking the question answer. He doesn't give the answer in Luke. He lets the questioner answer, and the questioner gets the answer right. Two parts. Love God, honor God, love your neighbor as yourself. And then the guy says, well, who's my neighbor? And Jesus tells about the Good Samaritan. What does it mean to be a good neighbor, and who is our neighbor? In Jesus' time, it might have been a little simpler. When I lived in Adelphi, Ohio, it was a little simpler to know who my neighbor was. I don't live in that world anymore. It gets more and more confusing. At this point, Pastor Dennis would hold up his phone. My phone just makes phone calls, so I can't do that. But if you hold up your phone, you're connected to the world now. If you turn on the television, you can connect to the world. If you go on your computer, you can connect to the world. So the question becomes, who is my neighbor? Is it Sesame Street? Is it that simple? Is it the people that you come in touch with? Is it an entire beach full of starfish that can be kind of overwhelming? Is it Korea? Is it places in the world where there are trouble and where there's hunger? There's so much out there that we are connected with as neighbors that sometimes it's tough. And it's so overwhelming that we hesitate. We stop short. Today's lesson and what they're preaching about in churches all around Lancaster and all around this country is what it means to be a neighbor and who is my neighbor. I've given you a homework assignment. I'm a teacher. It's what I do. It's in your bulletin. There's just a little piece of paper. And it says, you are here, and that's your house. And there are houses all around you. Being on the internet, being connected, being in our multimedia age can be overwhelming. Where do we start to make a difference? How well do you know your neighbors? How well do you know the person to the left of you and the right of you, behind you, in front of you, up the hill, down the hill? How well do you know these people? The first test in our neighboring activities, which Pastor Dennis is going to follow through with in the next few weeks, but the first step is to know who your neighbors are. How much do you know about them? What personal things do you know about them? I will tell you that when we moved into our house 30, 35 years ago, I probably knew my neighbors better then than I do now, because things have changed. And have I become less connected with them? Yes. When my children were young, was it easier to make connections? Yes. It's different now. Your assignment, should you decide to accept it, is to look at that chart. Try to identify for yourself, who are your neighbors in those positions? For people in town, it's a little easier than for some of the people that live out in the country, but try it. And if you feel that you are really well acquainted with that first block around you, try to extend. Go out another block and see how many people you can identify. And are you willing to try to get to know those people and to work with those people too? Your assignment, your homework, is to think about your neighbor, what you know about them, how personally connected you are to them. Because the whole purpose of this exercise over the next few weeks is to move people from being strangers to being acquaintances to being in strong relationships with. Because when you touch people, you make a difference. When you pick up a starfish and throw it back in the ocean, you help. Every person you touch helps. So I urge you, give a thought to what it means to be a good neighbor and start by knowing your neighbors. Amen.